Prashant shares his journey from India to Europe with the mission of building Bitcoin infrastructure that works across borders. In this episode, he breaks down how Bringin is delivering seamless lightning-powered payments and what it really takes to navigate regulation and scale globally. As a reminder, this podcast is for educational purposes only. If you enjoy our content, please remember to share, like, or drop us a comment.
This isn't for everyone. It's for the ones who know the old system is broken and are ready to build something that lasts. Welcome to the Build with Bitcoin podcast.
I'm co-host Israel Munoz, joined with co-host Lynn Bairstow. Today, we have the pleasure of welcoming Prashant, CEO and founder of Bringin, a Bitcoin to Euro spending platform. And first of all, welcome, Prashant. We're excited to have you on the podcast.
Israel, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, well, let's get right into it, Prashant. I mean, we'll, of course, get into the ins and outs of what Bringin, the platform and app does, you know, the services you offer in Europe. But let's get started first with your backstory, you know, as much as you're comfortable sharing regarding your upbringing and what introduced you to Bitcoin. Maybe we can start there.
Yeah, sure. I'm originally from India. So I was born and brought up in a small town closer to a city called Bangalore. It's southern part of India. So I'm an engineer, graduated from college with computer science degree. And I started working in startups. So startup kind of always attracted me. I wanted to always be part of a startup to be able to build something innovative. Aside from the college, I was always interning in a lot of startups and trying to build products, being an early member of the startups. So naturally, after I was like exposed to a bunch of startups, and then in 2017, there was a lot of hype about Bitcoin and the technology around Bitcoin, digital gold. So I kind of didn't get into Bitcoin in 2017, but then in 2018, I started studying Mastering Bitcoin book by Andreas Antonopoulos. So I started studying Bitcoin, and as I got deeper understanding of the technology works, the blockchain, and how the funds are sent over decentralized internet, that kind of it was very intriguing to understand, and I couldn't comprehend that the fact that this is possible. I did have a basic understanding of how banking systems work, like you deposit cash and they have a ledger systems which they rebalance and everything like that. But this is decentralized ledger, being able to move funds across internet without having any centralizations. All of this was extremely interesting, and I couldn't believe this kind of technology existed. And this kind of drove me to learn more about Bitcoin. And then I was looking for startups that was building Bitcoin payments at the moment. So I was fortunate enough to find a company called Lastbit, which was building Bitcoin payments. And I joined there as a first engineer, working on a backend system for the company, which was building Bitcoin payments at the time.
When I first learned about Bitcoin in 2012, 2013, it was that idea of, for me, it was like the missing piece of the internet. We had kind of gotten it down to be able to transfer information and even entertainment as bandwidth expanded, but we still couldn't transfer value without having a very complicated way. And coming from the US and the development where everyone had credit cards, and then moving to Mexico and LATAM where people didn't have that facility, so banks were very behind and they couldn't transfer the value. What was it like in India at that time in terms of capabilities for transferring value, and how did that unlock kind of happen for you, where you saw that if you truly could do peer-to-peer, then it would take away, then it would kind of eliminate some of the friction and the barriers that commerce over the internet was running into?
This is very interesting, because the first time I got into Bitcoin was more for, I was very intrigued about the technology and how it worked, but then when I realized the actual value of Bitcoin is when I moved to Estonia. So, as I said, I was working on this. I was working as an initial member of the startup, and they moved to Estonia, and we had to physically move to get the licenses. So at the time I should get paid only in Bitcoin. And then, a colleague of mine also moved with me, but then he just had Indian national rupees in his bank account in India. So when we moved together, I was able to use our own product that we had built at the time to liquidate and pay rents, advance for getting the houses for rent. But my colleague struggled. He tried like a lot of products to move funds from India to Europe, and it was just not possible. And I was surprised. And I was talking to him, and there must be some way. And he literally did KYC in multiple platforms, and he was not able to move Indian national rupees, INR, from banks to Europe. And this was surprising. And then he had to finally borrow Bitcoin from me, pay the rent, and then he got the next salary. He bought the Bitcoin back and gave the Bitcoin back to me. So this was the only way he was able to get a house for rent, pay advances, and be able to move effectively. So that's the point where I realized. So after digging deeper, I understood it's by design. The developing countries do not want the funds to go out of the country. And this revolves around every process. Whenever I go to like an embassy applying for a visa to go out of the country, they check my bank balance. If it's not enough, they won't let me go out. Everything just started clicking in my mind. Okay, so like Bitcoin is, of course, a great, is an awesome technology to move the money value over internet, but also it's self-sovereign. It empowers individuals to be able to move anywhere they want in the world. So that's where it clicked. And then I made sure that I want to work in Bitcoin and be able to do something for the community. So that's the kind of understanding.
There's so many of these small siloed payment or currency ecosystems around the world. And if you're within that, then of course you probably don't have much friction, or you don't see, you know, much pain points. But again, these are siloed, small, segregated, permissioned ecosystems. So, I mean, it's only once you start, you know, trying to interact with other places around the world or other siloed systems around the world that unlock really happens, right? And that's of course why the fact that the Bitcoin network operates in a borderless and permissionless fashion is so powerful, much more powerful than people realize, right? So I mean, yeah, I love that story. And then you started to touch on it, but let's maybe get into, okay, so you moved to Estonia, you're working for a company that's paying you in Bitcoin. Where does the inspiration for bringing come from?
So I was working for this company. It's called LastBit, and it is building debit cards that allows people to fund with Lightning transactions and then pay for goods and services. But the entire solution was built on a complex infrastructure where we had multiple banking partners and then multiple exchange partners. Users have to do multiple KYCs, and the fees was stacking up to like 3-4%. It was just not scalable. And the company had to get their own licenses. The startup that I used to work in, LastBit, we moved to Estonia to get our own licenses. But then in the process of getting our own licenses, the founders decided to pivot to build infrastructure or licensed platform, banking as a service, more than like the product that allows Bitcoiners to like liquidate and leave on Bitcoin. While I was working in the startup building the infrastructure, I had the product cease to exist. So they had to stop LastBit. So that's when the only product that I used to use to liquidate Bitcoin and pay for things did not exist anymore. So even as I was working in the startup, I used Kraken a couple of times to liquidate Bitcoin, and then they suddenly halted supply withdrawals, and the process was not easy. And then I had to like use other exchange, which exchange Binance, and then the user experience was horrendous. It took almost 4 days to get euros into my bank account. And even if I get euros, my Revolut, my banks don't allow transfers from these exchanges. The funds were sent back to Binance. I had to buy Bitcoin and then had to look for other platforms to liquidate and see. So it was almost like my Bitcoin was not usable. It was surprising for me to see that there were no other alternatives to just, you know, like buy, you know, flight tickets or pay for goods and services back then. So it was very clear we were building infrastructure that kind of helps businesses to be built. And then I was facing this problem. And then I talked to the founders. I told them, hey, I want to build a solution to be able to like live on Bitcoin. And then I talked to them, worked another 4 months, helping them with the infrastructure. And then So that's when the idea of Bring In came into existence, to build a product that allows people to use Bitcoin for whatever needs they have. These users who hold Bitcoin, they're not served well. There are always companies attracting more people to buy Bitcoin, but the people who already hold Bitcoin was never served. They're underserved. And that's where I wanted to bring in to help people who hold Bitcoin to live on Bitcoin.
Lynn and I are partners at Baselayer Advisors, where through our experience and network with venture capital partners, we connect interested investors with unique opportunities in the space and advise startups on their growth and fundraising. Visit our website's advisory section to learn more.
And maybe now is a good time to just describe a little bit about what exactly is Bring In and what services do you offer through it, and who is the general geographic market, or is it global? So we'd love to just get an overview of what Bring In provides.
When I was in Estonia, I was not able to use Bitcoin, and then our partners were building services that allows me to build for European market. So that's the first geography. Today, Bring In allows people to liquidate Bitcoin from any of their bank wallets to get euros into any of their bank accounts. So we take an entire banking first approach. We provide IBAN accounts for every customers, and then we plug that with exchanges. So when users send us Bitcoin, we convert it to euros, deposit to their own IBAN account, and make a SEPA withdrawal into their banks. So now the banks do not see the funds are coming from exchange or third-party payments, which kind of triggers high-risk transfers. It comes from their own IBAN account. And the entire transfers happens without any friction. So that's the main value proposition we brought into the market, which is well-received by most of the Bitcoiners. They started liquidating Bitcoin, small amounts, bigger amounts. So we facilitated transactions from 10 euros to close to 500,000. So as of today, cumulatively, we have moved about 12 to 12.5 million euro worth Bitcoin with the same value proposition. And most of our users are the people that we want to serve, the people who held Bitcoin, who liquidate Bitcoin to buy houses, boats, passports. And some of the users who sold their houses to buy Bitcoin to move outside the country. So these are the customers that we serve.
And across Europe, Prashant, any insights or metrics you can share with us as far as where your main users are based, if certain countries you see more growth than others and why?
The country with most transaction volume or more customers is from Germany. So Germany, Belgium, and Netherlands. So these are the countries with highest transactions because more users are from these jurisdictions. So there's a strong reason for this, because the banks, especially in these countries, are not Bitcoin friendly. So any bank transfer from, like, let's say Wise from Belgium, you do a transaction to Kraken, instantly the Wise accounts get blocked. This is the constant complaints that we heard. And Belgium banks are not very friendly with exchanges. So these customers find Bring In extremely valuable, especially because they can buy and sell Bitcoin without having any flags from the bank. So these are the three top jurisdictions. And Spain, people buy more Bitcoin from Spain, and Italy is the next one. So apart from this, it's just the Nordic, Sweden and Norway, Finland put together, they come in, fourth, fifth, sixth position.
You know, this kind of brings to mind a question. You know, you see Christine Lagarde in the EU and all the talk about this CBDC and kind of the anti, is there a more of a regulatory anti-Bitcoin from the top level of governments and banking institutions? Do you feel that that is why there's such stringent use? Like I use Wise and I've learned fast not to bring anything around Bitcoin or exchanges with them because it just red flags the account. So, and knowing that that's, you know, European based, but yeah, I mean, how do you approach that from a philosophical standpoint? Like what do you see the big picture attitude is toward Bitcoin as a medium of exchange in Europe?
That's an interesting question. One, obviously from a regulation, from working in a company which is regulated. So, which brings me to AML, anti-money laundering, and trade financing. All those are the reasons for, you know, transaction monitoring and all that. But essentially, it's death to privacy. It's like every transaction is being monitored, and then it's trying to, the regulations are designed to have more control over the funds, and there's less and less privacy for the users who want to do it the right way, who want to buy Bitcoin in exchanges, regulated exchange, who want to liquidate Bitcoin in a regulated exchange. So this is obviously unfortunate and nothing, but there's one aspect, which is kind of hopeful, is there's regulations. This is a good part, right? Because in India, if I want to do the same thing, there's no regulations, which means you can operate allowing people to buy and sell Bitcoin. You can provide a service, but then banking relationship is extremely fragile. So since there is no regulations, it's totally central bank sending notifications to the bank and allowing them to work with exchanges or not. So it becomes extremely fragile to build a sustainable business, allowing people to take money into their self-custody, allowing them to buy Bitcoin into their self-custody. So I see it as a good thing. Although the regulators do not want the Bitcoin to become the medium of exchange, but it's unstoppable because by design, Bitcoin is self-custody, which means regulators cannot prevent people buying Bitcoin to self-custody, as in like their own wallets, which is outside the regulation scope. So as in more and more of that is happening when people are buying Bitcoin to self-custody, so entire payments will fall out of regulatory framework, and it's inevitable for Bitcoin payments to advance. But I'm glad the regulations are there so that companies can exist in a legal framework, allowing people to buy Bitcoin to self-custody.
The regulatory landscape is an interesting and evolving scenario. But I mean, when you were just saying, you know, ultimately Bitcoin, you can't really stop it. It reminds me, a few years ago, I visited, I was in a trip in Cuba, and one of the places where you would think most hostility, you know, might be towards a decentralized currency. And it surprised me that it had actually taken off quite a bit there. And just organically, it was used quite a bit for, you know, day-to-day payment and medium of exchange uses. And you know, of course, it varies across jurisdictions. And here in the U.S., we're in the middle of, you know, lots of regulatory ups and downs and battles. Ultimately, I mean, I think the point you touch is a good one. I'm of the opinion that it probably is better to have some regulation than not, to your point, you know, on the India example, because otherwise it's again fragile, and you just never know when your business might be shut down if there's, you know, complete absence of it. But then again, you have to get it right. And Europe, my impression has been with the MiCA situation that they leaned towards a very hostile approach and full control approach, trying to make sure it's as centralized as possible. But nonetheless, bringing back to Brigand, I mean, all of these regulatory hurdles as well, of course, have high, you know, have high capital costs. You have to get license. You have to build a team around compliance. Can you take us through the founder journey of building Brigand as well? I mean, from the perspective of building a team, fundraising, how did you approach that? Because it sounds like to my understanding, this is maybe the first company that you've yourself founded and fundraised for.
Going after building a regulatory institution in Europe, being an engineer is totally not something that you would think of. And it was the same for me as well. As an engineer, when I was working in Striga and I wanted to build Brigand, it was like, it was a lot of hows and buts and why and many questions out there. So, and also, like, I didn't have a co-founder. Trying to build this institution all alone was definitely challenging. So I tried to build a support system around, like, moving to a position where I want to be. The first thing I did was try to join founders community. So I applied for curated founder communities around the world, pitching my idea and trying to be part of the founders community, trying to understand and learn from the founders. So I was part of OnDeck. I'm not sure if you guys are aware of it. It's a curated founder community in San Francisco, and they were global at the time because of the COVID. And it gave me an opportunity to like connect with other founders, experienced founders who raise funds, and try to kind of understand how they how they did the journey. And then I learned a lot from about fundraising and everything on this founder community. So that kind of gave me a lot of confidence in like moving forward with Bring In. And from a regulations perspective, so I want to build a company which mostly deals with technology and not the regulation aspect of it. So since I've worked in a company that kind of tied multiple financial services together to build a technology layer that serves the customer, I want to do the same. I didn't want to jump head on to deal with the regulations. I wanted to work with the partners who are regulated and that I can trust. So the company that I used to work with before, they just received the licenses, and then I kind of helped them build most of, or initial part of the infrastructure. So the first approach was to build a technology company, relying on the services that our partners provide. And once we have enough customers and once we have enough product market fit, once we understand that we're solving a problem that really matters, and that's when we can like raise more funds and get our own licenses in different jurisdictions. So till today, Bring In has been only technology company. We are trying to build on financial services that we trust to ensure that we have a good product market fit. So although we have been building on other financial services, like end user experience has been exceptionally good. But once we hit the point where we want to do it ourselves, we will raise more funds to get our own licenses. So I kind of plan it in a way where it will be a technology company, users first, trying to understand the product market fit, and then raise funds to get their own licenses.
Might some of these other, can you give some examples of the financial services that you could be expanding into? Would that involve like even lending against Bitcoin? It seems like one of the ones that we hear a lot about these days.
Yeah. So with regards to lending, there are like a couple of ways you could do it. You could obtain your license and then allow customers to borrow from your own services. That's just like financial services. But there are innovative ways to do it as well with Bitcoin, because Bitcoin can be locked as a collateral in a multisig wallet, which is verifiable, and people can use stable coins to get the loans. So there is technology, but that's maturing. But then there's also regulations. Currently, the regulation landscape is kind of moving towards. So MiCA is kind of restricting a lot of movements. For example, there's travel rule, there's DAC8, and there's a lot of things that is kind of not allowing people to do private transactions. It's obviously bad, and we are trying to impose more restrictions in our product as well, which is obviously not, which is not nice, but we got to do what we got to do. But then regulation also allows us to set a bar against other banking providers, which means as a service providers who hold MiCA licenses allows us to easily share data amongst other service providers. For example, tomorrow, if we want to work with lending and borrowing services, that allows us to work with multiple partners and having them share the details amongst themselves so that we as a technology company can abstract all the complexity and give the solution in one product where people can get access to all the services like debit cards, swaps, wallets, and lending and borrowing. So that's the kind of direction Bring In is heading towards, where we are a technology company. We plug into services in a meaningful way in based on the jurisdictions to make sure the customer gets everything in an easy to use user experience in a product, which feels like banking. It shouldn't feel like cryptocurrency wallet.
Yeah, and you hit on, I think, a key point there. Prashant, and you mentioned a couple times, you know, users first, user experience. Can you tell us, I ask this as well because you clearly have a technical background, and it's not always easy for a startup, for particularly Bitcoin startup, to get the user experience right. And I'd like to hear a little more about your, you know, challenges, learnings, and how you've approached that. Because I do think broadly, and I do see this changing, but Bitcoin companies have struggled with the user experience. And, you know, you compare the usability of services, you know, other big fintechs. Now we're talking about Europe. So let's say, I don't know, a Revolut or some of these other companies that fintechs that have had massive success. And a lot of it is actually attributable to precisely that, right? The user experience. What learnings can you share as far as the UX user first side and how you've approached that?
Absolutely. So before starting my journey in Bitcoin space or Bitcoin startups, I used to work building consumer product for internet. So just small tools to allow customers, like small consumer product internet tools. So I was always building small products in the internet, like a Hindi hacker, always trying to talk to customers. Most of my time I spent before joining a Bitcoin startup as an engineer was just to go to meetups and talk to customers and try to understand what problem is. In my career, I built a lot of tools, which was not used at all. And every next product I want to build, I wanted to start by talking to customers first. So this has been the journey before I got into Bitcoin. So that kind of helped me a lot when I started bringing. So I started talking to a lot of customers who were in the Bitcoin space. Put the post out in LinkedIn saying this is the problem that I'm facing, and then I would like to connect with other people who are facing the same problem. So I used a couple of ways to get people on board for a call to understand the problems. So if they're earning in Bitcoin, if they hold Bitcoin, and trying to understand various behaviors how they try to liquidate Bitcoin right now. So we wanted to build one product that does only one thing, that allows people to liquidate Bitcoin. So based on all the information that we had from all the behavioral data that we collected and talking to a lot of customers, we started building what we wanted to build. It's kind of bringing didn't come from a perspective, from a point where we want to build a Bitcoin wallet or we want to build a wallet that brings Bitcoin to people. It was kind of coming from a perspective, what problem are we solving? So this kind of is not normal in this space. Most of the wallets are open source and highly technical, built by developers and contributed by developers. But then when you're trying to build a venture-scale business, you want to solve a problem that is common for a lot of people so that you can build a sustainable business and raise funds and scale it to a lot more businesses. So I was struggling to find this one. Like I was struggling to understand exactly how do we build the solution so that it is exact fit to the problem that I faced. And that's how it worked out. I was able to validate talking to a lot of customers that this is a problem. And the first product was simple web app. It has just 4 pages that allows people to send Bitcoin from anywhere and receive euros to bank account. 75% of our volumes have been driven by this initial MVP web app. We built a lot of tools after that, but still that one single web page with 4 web pages is doing most of the volume. So we've been careful to talk to more customers and trying to understand what exact tools they need and then build accordingly. So I'm trying to learn more about product development as well and work with the team, talk more to the users and trying to understand what exactly they need before building. I have engineering tendency to build a lot of things, but I do build on side projects, but I'm trying to keep the product and the team away from distractions and all my crazy ideas.
So that's just a fantastic way of looking at it. I think one of the ingredients of successful founders is really focusing on what the customer is trying to solve instead of assuming that. I'm thinking that if your client, and I'd like you to talk to me a little bit about who your client is, because it sounds like your client might be a little bit more sophisticated technically, that they have Bitcoin or they're earning in Bitcoin. So does that make it easier? Because I think old school Bitcoiners tend to be a little bit more technical, but then you have growth. And so once you've kind of saturated that, how are you approaching someone who's more sophisticated that holds a lot of Bitcoin with expanding your market and reaching people who may be newer to Bitcoin?
Thanks for bringing it up, because this is the kind of challenge that we have been facing from the past few months. As you exactly said, the product was catered to the people who already understand Bitcoin and they're privacy focused. They know the wallets, they use VPNs, they use private emails, and they're sophisticated, as you mentioned. So, this brings back to the question that value that Bitcoin offers customers, which is movement of value over the globe. So when I came, I used Bitcoin, but I off-ramped to Euro to be able to pay for goods and services. But here, the movement of value was done by Bitcoin. It was me who understood Bitcoin was able to off-ramp. But then this is the kind of value we want to get to other people who are not Bitcoiners, who we don't want to essentially, like, of course, people will eventually buy Bitcoin. We are not here to preach Bitcoin is good and then buy Bitcoin with us. That is two different things, and we can't do two things effectively. We can't sell the value of Bitcoin and top of that sell value of bring in to be the best product to buy Bitcoin. So we start by giving the product to people who already want to buy Bitcoin, and to give the value of Bitcoin to the people who don't want to buy Bitcoin. For example, the people can start moving funds across the globe. For example, if you want to move funds from Mexico with a balance, the balance is pesos, and if you want to click on send, enter my IBAN details and click on send, and I receive euros. So this can be facilitated with Bitcoin without having to know that user is actually using Bitcoin, because it allows people to move value across the globe. So we want to sell the value that Bitcoin offers to the consumers and solve problems there. Remittances, business paying their employees, accepting Bitcoin payments or payments across the globe. So this is a value that we are trying to solve, and that's the vision. So to use Bitcoin as a settlement layer to move money across while still serving people who already want to buy Bitcoin in an efficient way. So this allows us to do revenue. This allows us to be sustainable. This allows us to build a strong community around the product while scaling to a much broader audience who don't necessarily hold Bitcoin, but can get value out of Bitcoin.
Yeah, and you touch on a super interesting point there with these different corridors and cross border value transfer real time. Even when you're switching between Bitcoin and other currencies, you're built on the Lightning Network, I believe, right? Which allows for this real time movability of Bitcoin. Cracking a myth here, many people who are new to Bitcoin think of it as this kind of clunky, slow value transfer, right? And of course, Lightning Network has been the big improvement in that usability and real-time settlement, and of course, adding a bit of a privacy layer as well. But yeah, can you get a little bit into the rails that bring in users and why that allows you to expand into these, maybe other multi-currency corridors?
So Lightning is a later technology that allows Bitcoin to scale. It makes the transactions faster and cheaper. So the adoption has been increasing for over the past few years. And since our customers are Bitcoiners, they're more aware of Lightning as a technology and they are using Lightning wallets. So Bringin is leveraging Lightning from the very first day. Our first product supports Lightning transfers. So the reason why we did what we did was, as I said, like I waited for 4 days to get Bitcoin from my wallet to bank. And then we used leverage Lightning, and we launched a product that allows you to move from Bitcoin from your wallet to bank in seconds. So that was never done in the world before. So that's something that we brought to the world, where you can move from wallet to bank in seconds. So this is just demonstrating how we can move funds from one system, which is totally not in a banking rails, it's self-custody, Bitcoin blockchain. And then there's other banks, which euros and debit cards and all that. This is just to demonstrate how quickly you can go between these two worlds. So once we have established this, the movement of from bank and the Bitcoin in the layer two that can scale Bitcoin, this movement is established and it's being utilized in a product. People are able to top up their debit card with Lightning. People are able to buy Bitcoin over Lightning to self-custody. Everything is done by Lightning without people realizing there's Lightning involved. So we've always leveraged Lightning to ensure there's a good user experience. Movement of funds is always faster and it's always cheaper. Some people don't know they're using Lightning, but we leverage Lightning to move funds from bank to self-custody. We want to do the same with cross-border payments. We do have partners across the globe that allows Lightning to bank off-ramping and third-party payouts. So we want to leverage Euro to Lightning and Lightning to other currencies, local bank off-ramping. So this is just one corridor. Europe to Latin America is the biggest corridor that we expect to see most of the traffic coming from, or most of the demand, or most of the people who want to send funds from Spain to other Latin American countries. But we also quickly want to expand to US, where we establish as like on-ramping, like USD to Lightning and Lightning to other currency off-ramping. We partner with various other companies in Latin America and Africa to ensure there's movement of funds. So Lightning has been, Lightning is a way to quickly move or transfer value. And it happens in seconds. And not a lot of people want everything to happen in seconds, but then it just does. It just does. And that kind of reduces a lot of operational overload when you're moving funds across countries.
Can you talk a little bit about how you see Lightning as a technology evolving? I mean, it feels as if, you know, the reliability of Lightning payments and the channels, have evolved quite substantially over the years to where now individual transactions are pretty much seamless. But how do we get to the point where you have multinational corporations that can move large amounts of money through via Lightning? I think, you know, when you're explaining how you approach growth at Bringin and showing people that who may not have an interest in Bitcoin itself, but they have an interest in moving money on a frictionless way, and you take it from that approach. And I think that there's massive opportunity for these multinational, for businesses all over the world to move via Lightning to other geographies. What do we need to do to see Lightning get to that scale? And how are you viewing the evolution of the Lightning protocol?
So the way I see it is everything comes based on the need, like the problem that we are solving. Right now, Lightning is mostly used for individual payment and merchant payments, which is very, the need for the transaction is very small. So the channels between the nodes that merchants run, everything is small. So the Lightning adoption comes when Lightning is leveraged for the right purposes. And as you exactly hinted, the business-to-business payments. So we have an incorporation in Delaware C-Corp in US, and then we have employees and contractors in EU and India. So for us to be able to move funds from US to EU, sometimes it takes over the weekend. I should be more cautious to make sure that I do the transfer on the Friday, otherwise I miss the window and I come on. So everything is important when it comes to timings for the business to move value, to be able to settle the invoices, to be able to move funds. It's extremely important for the transfers to happen fast. So Lightning can come to rescue here. No one has leveraged Lightning so far to make fund settlements across between the institutions. So Lightning can scale fundamentally. So there can be channels between the institutions that allows to move funds between to and from. By design, Lightning is scalable. It is not that the Lightning is not scalable, but no one has built the solutions on Lightning the way it can actually add value to businesses. So we have seen, like, over the past 2 years, there's a lot of toolings that is being built, like a lot of liquidity providers, a lot of toolings to manage Lightning. And it's like Lightspark in the US, and there's Orange in South Africa, like leveraging Lightning for business payments. So we've been seeing these institutions coming up recently that is leveraging Lightning to move funds between the institutions. So we just need more of these businesses to leverage Lightning to do that. And the technology supports larger transactions. It's just that it's not being done yet. And there were certain bottlenecks with the toolings and with the liquidity and a lot, but that has come a long way since like past 2 to 3 years. So now it's a time. Lightning is ready to scale. We need more and more companies to leverage Lightning to move value across.
Yeah, it certainly seems like it's healthy growth that's happening in the Lightning ecosystem. Lynn and I have gotten to speak to a few excellent startups that are working on the Lightning rails. And yeah, I mean, all metrics, numbers, and statistics that I can point to and see is just, you know, kind of growing, addressing new pain points. It's evolving quickly. And it reminds me, this week, I believe it was, I was seeing some research that the Bitcoin transaction count was reaching a local high. I can't remember it since how many years it's kind of upticking again. And it brings me to a question, Prashant. I mean, for you, has the Bitcoin price action this year affected at all your user base or your transaction volumes that bring in? Or how has that, if at all, affected your business?
Price action has definitely affected our volume. The volumes in total has dropped because of the price drop. And this is anticipated and this is expected. But the interesting thing is number of people who are doing transactions, the number of transactions is not decreasing. People are trying to do transactions, but just the overall volume, like for example, the whales who wants to like do a larger purchase is just are holding off till the price comes back up so that they can get more value for the Bitcoin than right now. The price action definitely has affected the volume. So the way I, as a founder, see building Bitcoin companies is totally is a bit different from building a traditional company, because any other company, you always want to see the graphs going up. But in Bitcoin, it's all about surviving the bear markets so that you are building the right tools so that then when the market comes up, you have the right tooling and you are right there at a good with the right solution, so that you can capitalize on the Bitcoin price actions. So this is inevitable. I think, as you guys might know from different founders, everyone have to go through the cycles and adopt the company expenses according to the cycles. The advantage of bringing is, since you're a tech team, so I'm the founder and CTO, I'm able to leverage most of the technology, most of the AI and technology to reduce, like increase operational efficiency to keep the burn extremely low. And since I'm technical as well, can contribute hugely on building things, it has allowed us to scale. It allows us to keep those costs lean while still continuing to operate efficiently.
Yeah, and I'd like to, if you could, just share with us a little bit about the growth of Bringin. You launched publicly in February of 2024. So during that period of time, you're now in 28 countries in Europe, but can you talk a little bit about the growth of the company and how you're seeing it? And you know, I think you've already addressed the fact that the price does affect it, but how are you getting the word out? How are you increasing the volumes? I'd love to just hear how you're thinking about the growth of the company.
The growth for us has been only organic so far. So since we are solving a specific problem, it allows us to onboard customers who tell other customers about this particular solution, because we are very focused on particular kind of problem that we're solving. We launched the first version of the product in February 2024. That's right. We have been organically scaling since then. So we have moved totally 160 Bitcoin. That comes up to 12.5 million euro worth Bitcoin so far. When it comes to number of transactions, 65% of our transactions are done over Lightning. So we are, our users are leveraging Lightning to move funds, buy Bitcoin, sell Bitcoin, to reduce the time between the buy and sell. So from the growth perspective, we are continuously trying to, show the community what we're doing from in X, like organ, and we're trying to build content around what might be useful for our clients. So we have been pushing out content, we have been showing what we've been doing, and we're continuously shipping extra tools and features that add value to our customers. And we have an affiliate program where our customers can refer another customer, and then we give a small part of revenue to the referred customer. So this is the only way we have been growing. We have not spent on marketing, ads, anything until now. We recently launched a version 2 of Bringin after considering all the feedbacks and future potential and direction of Bringin. So this is a high quality fintech product that allows people to hold Bitcoin in self-custody and be able to do banking, which is debit card payments and SEPA payments. So we're in early stages of getting the version 2 feedback from the existing customers. And the next phase is growth. So we want to be able to scale the solutions to more customers.
And as you approach your growth phase, Prashant, how are you thinking about team? And also, are you looking at fundraising at all? Or how are you approaching this next phase?
We raised a pre-seed last year. So that allows us to like build a good product and take to the market. So we raised about $940,000 capital in the pre-seed. And the first tranche was just by angel investors. I reached out to a lot of angel investors, and then some VCs backed a company in the pre-seed. So we fortunately have some runway, and we might raise a small extension to make sure that we are alive. We want to raise a healthy seed next year at a better valuation. So we plan to raise a seed round next year, but we need another 1 year to be able to launch Bring It for Business and to be able to expand to US for businesses. And once we prove the infrastructure is working with both business and consumers, and we move enough volume to all of these products, we want to raise a seed round next year to be able to scale the solution.
And I'll allow you to move to the US, but you also, as I understand it, have some plans between now and that seed phrase to do more expansion into the Mexico market, which I'm obviously very interested in, and also in the Indian market. How are you thinking? How do you select the geographies that you're expanding into, and how do you go about that on the technical side?
So one is operational side. So we are trying to understand how we can operate in different jurisdictions being in EU. The time zone is a huge factor for us. And from a technical side, we do have partners. We do. So the way we've created Imbrilina is like, it's like a infrastructure that can plug into any services, and we can swap in, swap out services. And we can do that for consumers and corporate, and we can expand to that different geography. So most of our effort has been building this infrastructure. So now it's easy for us to like partner with any service providers in US and in Mexico to plug in and then offer the same services with the same product in that jurisdictions. So from technical side, we have done the hard work that we are supposed to do, and we already have relationship with the service providers, and we have alternative setups as well with the service providers. The only thing that is preventing us from expanding is operational capacity. So most of the team right now is based in EU, like, and we are known for our quality service. So we want to ensure that our service stays the same when we expand to other jurisdictions. So we're internally discussing and understanding how we can meaningfully launch the same product with a different go-to-market strategy and when it comes to different jurisdictions. And also be able to provide the same service, customer support services. And when it comes to picking up the service, picking up the jurisdiction, we always try to understand where we fit as someone who understands the community. So we are, if you're trying to build someone for someone that we can't empathize, we won't be successful. Naturally, Brian has multiple companies in US, EU, and as an immigrant founder, I face certain issues moving funds across. So these are the things that we want to solve as a company. So when we say we were expanding to Mexico, we probably are not building a consumer product in Mexico. We're probably building rails that allows user companies from US to pay people in Mexico. So that's how we see when it comes to expansion.
You guys are well positioned to address these off ramps in all sorts of ways. We certainly look forward to also keeping in touch with you and your efforts at Bring In, Prashant, and maybe we can check back in sometime down the road and see where you guys stand and how the story has evolved. Any last questions or comments, Lynn, before we wrap up?
You decided as an engineer, once you kind of had the unlock of Bitcoin, to get involved. What would your advice be for somebody who's experiencing this unlock themselves today to get involved with either joining a Bitcoin company or building a Bitcoin company?
Building a Bitcoin company or joining a Bitcoin company. So one is to build a network with this people that you want to work with. So that's I think is critical. So one is being able to like code and apply for a job, but other one is to build network with the people that you want to work with. I think that's fundamental. So allowing me to network with founders encouraged me to start my own company. So like building this network with the founders, fellow founders that you wanna that you wanna be in the future, that would be really helpful. So more and more you network with these people, you will understand or avoid noise and stay focused on what matters. And that will definitely help people land in the place they want to be. It could be founding engineer or a leadership position in a startup, on a Bitcoin startup, or starting their own journey in building a company as a founders in the space. So that definitely helps.
Where would you like to point people to who are interested in the products and services, or just want to get in touch for other partnership or potential opportunities?
So our Twitter handle is bringin.xyz on Twitter. But for any partnership opportunity, people can reach out directly to me. It's PrashantC123 on X. So they can reach out to me directly for any partnership, or if they want to join the team or investment opportunities, they can reach out directly to me.
Include that in the show notes too, so we make it easy for them to connect with you. You certainly highlighted a number of different opportunities in the growth of Bring In that are coming up. So hopefully people will take advantage of that and reach out to you. Thank you so much for your time. This has been great. We love hearing, on the ground in different geographies and in part of the world. So we love getting your insights and your experiences and how that's led to developing the company that you built. So we really appreciate your sharing that with us.
Thanks for having me. It's been nice talking to you guys, and happy to come on board. Come on the podcast sometime again soon, share the updates and share where we are.
When you're doing your seed, we'll have to get you back on.
Certainly, we'll do next year. Thanks again for having me on.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Build with Bitcoin. If you found it of value, please take a second to like, subscribe, or share. This helps the visibility and reach of our podcast so that more people are aware of the innovation happening in and around Bitcoin. It truly means a lot. I'd also like to take this opportunity to invite you to join us at an event that Israel and I are hosting, Meet to Tech Talks 2026, taking place from October 25th to the 27th at the exclusive Punta Mita Resort in Mexico. This will be an intimate gathering of 125 invite-only participants exploring how the future of capital is being shaped by the intersection of Bitcoin, artificial intelligence, and energy. To request an invite or for more information, visit mitatechtalks.com. We hope you'll join us. And thanks again for being a part of the Build with Bitcoin community.